We're talking to Sarah Milstein. She wrote the Twitter book with Tim O'Reilly. In that book, you talk about Twitter. Twitter's gotten very serious of late. It's helping to support the protests in Tehran. Could you talk a little bit about what you've seen in the past few days?
A couple of things are happening. I think the most significant, but also in some ways the hardest to parse out, are that people in Iran are using Twitter. And that's really important because what you see with that is Twitter as a highly distributed web service, because you can reach it on their website, you can reach it through the API and through a lot of different mechanisms, and you can reach it via text, is a tool that's really hard to shut down. You know, there aren't too many other communication tools that are so, in a way, of the people, because it's not controlled in any way by the state. I don't think that was by design. It wasn't intended to be a political tool, but that's turned out to be an important aspect of it. And that's what's being highlighted, I think, most significantly in Iran.
It seems like it's grown more serious. People are taking it seriously, whereas a few weeks ago during the flu, people were attacking it as something that shouldn't be taken too seriously. I mean, the State Department is now focused on Twitter. Talk about the transition between something that people view as a toy and something that's being used to support critical life and death action in another country.
Because people in Iran itself are able to use Twitter, that's part of what makes it a really critical tool. It's not just that people in other parts of the world can use it to share news or rumors about what's going on, but that people there have the opportunity to use it to share information with each other or to let people outside the country know what's going on. And that's tapped something very emotional internationally. I think it's a little bit different from the situation with swine flu, where perhaps it wasn't as if people who had swine flu were Twittering about it and providing a critical piece of information in the whole news cycle. What you generally saw was people passing along information that they'd seen on the mainstream media, which was a lot of it blown way out of proportion. I think it's fairly ironic that then the mainstream media turned around and started criticizing Twitter for spreading misinformation when most of what people were sharing were links to mainstream media sources. That said, at the time, Twitter started to emerge as a tool that the CDC was using to share information. So we're still new in it, and people don't know yet how to use Twitter really effectively en masse when we've got a crisis or something that's a big shared experience. And that's something that will emerge over time.
There was a conference in New York. I believe it was in New York. It was the 140 characters conference. Were you at that?
O'Reilly did a joint piece with 140 characters on Monday. We did a boot camp, and I was on the Monday piece.
Okay. At that camp, there was some discussion about, I think it was Rick Sanchez from CNN was talking about how Twitter was used to push CNN to increase coverage of the conflict. Could you talk a little bit about that, the power of collective action?
Yeah. People did use Twitter. There was a call on Twitter that was widely reposted, retweeted, for CNN to cover Iran in more depth and more seriousness. And, I mean, that's fine. It's an interesting tool, of course, that Twitter can give a lot of people a voice easily, and people can band together, and they can, ask networks to save their favorite sitcoms, and they can ask networks to cover news in certain ways. But it's not as if CNN is the only news outlet out there, and all the people who have access to CNN can turn around and get the news from other places that are covering it more deeply. So I'm not, it's a good way for CNN to get some feedback and hear what people want. But my sense is that a lot of what you saw on Twitter was not necessarily CNN viewers saying, we want more news. It was people elsewhere criticizing CNN for not having covered a piece of news more deeply than they did. And they're not obligated to cover it in any particular way.
So I'm going to ask you to sort of react to the general sentiment. Every week I read a piece by someone, some journalist who just signed up for Twitter, who tends to write a piece about how silly it is. Are you seeing more or less of this as time goes forward? And what do you think produces this constant trend, this constant need for people in the media to sort of either support or vociferously deny Twitter's legitimacy as a medium?
Well, the good news is that I'm definitely seeing less of that over time, but it's still there for sure. And I think that for reporters who are part of the media world, it's immediately clear to them that Twitter is also part of the media world. And some of them think that's exciting, and it resonates with them right away, or it doesn't resonate, but they feel like they should figure it out. And some of them, I think, just feel threatened by it or don't quite understand it and don't see how it's going to fit, even if they can recognize it as a tool for people to share information. I do think, though, one aspect of Twitter that's, you know, that people get to it and don't see right away the value is the idea that talking about what are you doing. That's the question you see when you arrive. If you're brand new to Twitter, you don't have a lot of people on it, you haven't seen it used to share useful professional information or links, you get there and you see, what are you doing? And you follow a couple people you know, and they're talking about what they're doing. In the first 5 minutes, that doesn't seem useful. It doesn't seem right away like that means anything. And what turns out is that for that what are you doing stuff, which can actually be really powerful, it takes a little while of following somebody on Twitter, especially people you care about, either people you know or you want to know. It takes a little while following them to get the sense of connection from getting their posts about what they're doing. So that part is easy to ridicule, and I usually suggest people spend a little time with that piece of it before they write it off. The piece about it's being part of the news ecosystem, that's easier to get right away, but you have to follow the right people to see that or be aware of the accounts that are sharing news in valuable ways.
So one last question, and it's not related to the protests, although that was the original reason I called you. Brady Forrest wrote a piece on Radar a few days ago about inadvertently leaving your geolocation service on, having it lead to embarrassing situations. Someone else on another news outlet, I forget the name, wrote a piece about how people are leery of Twittering and Facebook statusing their location for fear of, you know, letting a burglar know where they are. Have you heard any stories that would give people pause? I mean, have you encountered any people who got into embarrassing situations because they didn't realize what they were Twittering?
Who didn't realize where they were Twittering from? You mean that there were some location divulged?
Maybe location, or maybe they just said something they didn't mean to say in the forum. I mean, is this something that you think a lot of people experience once or twice, and then they learn their lesson?
I think what happens is that much more often people realize before they've made the mistake that there's the potential to reveal things they don't want to reveal. Probably the most prominent example of that is a PR consultant who was doing some work for FedEx, and he was in Memphis and Twittered about how much he didn't like the town. He didn't mention FedEx in the post, but he did mention the town, and people at FedEx took issue with that. You know, that's an example of some regrettable Twittering. But I think things like that probably on a much lower scale happen to a lot of people from time to time, and it's part of living your life in a somewhat more public way where you're posting status updates either to Twitter or Facebook or both, and a number of people you know can see them. I have yet to hear, though, of a story where somebody's house was robbed because they said they weren't there, or where they had some direct personal security issue because they talked about where they were. I think there's the potential for that to be problematic, but it hasn't emerged yet. And, you know, when people first had voicemail, there was the concern that having your voicemail pickup said that, you know, would say, oh, we're not here right now. You don't want to say that because that means your house is there to be robbed. Well, we've moved beyond worrying about what it means to have your voicemail pickup. And I think we'll see some similar evolution with status update tools, that people figure out how to use them in safe ways and learn what really works with them.
Okay, well, thanks for taking the time to talk to us about the evolving seriousness of Twitter. And if people want to find out more about you, where do they go?
To sarahmilstein.com. And the book is easy to find on Amazon. It's the Twitter book.
Okay. And you can also come to the O'Reilly site to find out more about that. Disclosure, she wrote a book for O'Reilly.